Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. Dramatised for radio by Dominic Power. Episode 1.
No one who had ever seen Catherine Morland in her infancy would have supposed her born to be an heroine. Her father was a very respectable clergyman, and he was not the least addicted to locking up his daughters. Her mother was a woman of useful, plain sense, and what is more remarkable, with a good constitution. She had 3 sons before Catherine was born, and instead of dying when bringing her into the world, as anybody might have expected, she lived on to have 6 children more. The Morlands were in general very plain, and Catherine, for many years of her life, as plain as any. She had a thin, awkward figure, dark, lank hair and strong features. She was fond of all boys' plays, and greatly preferred cricket, not merely to dolls, but to the more heroic enjoyments of infancy. Nursing a dormouse, feeding a canary bird, or watering a rose bush. Her mother wished her to learn music, and Catherine was sure she should like it, for she was very fond of tinkling the keys of the old forlorn spinet. She learned a year.
Catherine! Catherine!
Oh, she must practice, Mr. Morgan.
Perhaps, my dear, she would be better employed outside. I have my sermon to write.
Mrs. Morland, who did not insist on her daughter's being accomplished, allowed her to leave off. By the age of 15, she developed an inclination for finery.
Papa?
And she grew clean as she grew smart.
Oh, do look, Papa.
What? Ah, Catherine, that is a very nice dress.
Your daughter grows quite a good-looking girl, does she not?
Indeed. She is almost pretty today.
To look almost pretty is an acquisition of higher delight to a girl who has been looking plain for the past 15 years than a beauty from her cradle can ever receive.
Thank you, Papa.
From 15 to 17, she was in training for a heroine. She read all such works as heroines must read. From Pope, she learned to censure those who
bear about the mockery of woe.
From Gray, that
many a flower is born to blush unseen and waste its fragrance on the desert air.
From Shakespeare, she gained a great store of information, amongst the rest that
trifles light as air are to the jealous, confirmation strong as proofs of holy writ.
And that a young woman always looks
like patience on a monument, smiling at grief.
However, she reached the age of 17 without having seen one amiable youth who could call forth her sensibility, without having inspired one real passion. There was not one family among their acquaintance who had reared and supported a boy accidentally found at their door. But when a young lady is to be a heroine, something must and will happen to throw a hero in her way. At the beginning of the year, the Morlands received a visit from Mr. Allen, who owned the neighbouring estate, and his wife, who had a proposition for Catherine.
Well, February is always a wretched month for Mr. Allen, dear Mrs. Morland. He can hardly turn out to the end of the drive. Isn't that so, Mr. Allen?
If you say so, my dear. Come in, Catherine.
Yes, Papa.
Here is some news for you, my dear.
It seems we are to lose you, Catherine.
Papa?
The luckiest chance in the world. Mr. Allen is much afflicted these days.
Lucky indeed.
Gout. The physician has ordered him to bath for the waters. What do you think of that?
I hope he will be better soon.
No, no. About our proposal.
Mama?
Mr. and Mrs. Allen have been so good as to ask that you go with them to Bath.
Oh, did I not mention that? I thought I had. Would you like that, Catherine? Mr. Allen will be taking the waters for much of the time, so with you, I shall have someone to be with, to the shops and in the evening and so forth.
What do you say, Catherine?
May I go, Papa?
You will find the world very different beyond the walls of our parsonage.
I should like it more than anything.
Excellent. We should be glad of your company.
Oh, geez.
When the hour of Catherine's departure drew near, the maternal anxiety of Mrs. Morland must naturally be supposed to be most severe. Cautions against the violence of such noblemen and baronets as delight in forcing young ladies away to some remote farmhouse must at such a moment relieve the fullness of her heart.
Try to keep some account of the money you spend. Use the little book I gave you.
Yes, Mama.
Do not let the Allens buy you things. They are very generous, but it would never do.
Yes, Papa.
Oh, come here, dear. And always remember to wrap yourself up very warm about the throat when you come from the rooms at night.
Yes, Mama.
Goodbye, Catherine.
Goodbye.
Well, isn't this happy?
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Is it not so, Mr. Allen?
Yes, dear.
We will know a good many people, of course. The Perrys are sure to be there. George Perry is a charming young man. I dare say the Skinners will return this year. They have three girls, all near enough in age.
It is now expedient to give some description of Mrs. Allen, so that the listener may judge how she will probably contrive to reduce poor Catherine to all the desperate wretchedness of which a novel's last volume is capable, whether by her imprudence, vulgarity, or jealousy, whether by intercepting her letters or turning her out of doors.
You can't conceive of how many good shops there are. Is it not so, Mr. Allen?
Yes, dear.
One can step out of doors and get a thing in 5 minutes.
But all one can say with certainty is that Mrs. Allen belonged to that numerous class of females whose society can raise no other emotion than surprise at there being any men in the world who could like them enough to marry them. The air of a gentlewoman, an inactive good temper, and a trifling turn of mind were all that could account for her being the choice of a sensible man like Mr. Allen. They arrived at Bath. Catherine was all eager delight. Her eyes were here, there, everywhere, as they approached its fine and striking environs, and afterwards drove through those streets which conducted them to their comfortable lodgings in Pulteney Street. She was come to be happy. And she was happy already. The important evening came, which was to usher Catherine into the upper rooms. Her hair was cut and dressed. Her clothes were put on with care. And she hoped to pass uncensured through the crowd. As for admiration, it was always very welcome when it came, but she did not depend upon it.
Look at it, Mr. Allen. It's impossible. We shall be squeezed to death as soon as we venture in. Oh, I fear for my dress.
Well, my dear, you would take so long in choosing your dress for tonight. Now all the ladies who knew what they were wearing are already in place.
I am particularly vexed on your part, Catherine. You have been looking forward to this evening.
Perhaps we should turn back. The minuets are starting.
Oh, that is no matter. The country dance is still to come. Do you not find the crowd vexing, Mr. Allen?
Indeed it is, ma'am. As my physician has advised me to avoid all forms of vexation, I must leave you to fend for yourselves.
Where are you going?
The card room, where one may be pleasant and rational for an hour or two.
Oh, well, I dare say we shall fare better without him. We shall begin in the tea room. I was sure there would be some acquaintance here. Come, Catherine, take my hand.
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Thank you. Don't hold so tight, Catherine.
Oh,
look, look. There are two chairs.
Dear Mrs. Allen, we cannot sit there. The table is already occupied.
Aye, so it is, but we must sit somewhere. Go on.
Excuse me.
Oh, thank you. Oh, we're very much obliged.
How uncomfortable it is not to know anyone here.
Yes, my dear, it is very uncomfortable indeed. If we knew anybody, we would join them directly. The Skinners were here last year. I had counted on them being here tonight.
Excuse me, may I offer you some tea?
Oh, thank you.
We are much obliged to you.
This is your first visit to the upper rooms?
Yes.
Experienced visitors pursue seats with infinitely more ferocity. There is a delicacy in the way you command your chair that proclaims you a novice.
Ah, see?
The speaker was rather tall, had a pleasing countenance, a very lively and intelligent eye, and if not quite handsome, was near enough to it.
How is my head, dear? Somebody gave me such a push that I'm afraid it is spoiled.
It is very well, Mrs. Allen.
You are to be complimented for keeping your head in such difficult circumstances.
Thank you, Mr...
Henry Tilney.
Mrs. Allen of Fullerton. This is Catherine Morland. Her family are particular friends of ours. I had hoped we would see some acquaintance here. Do you know the Parrys?
I have not had the pleasure.
Oh, they're very good sort of people. If they had been here, Catherine might have danced with George Parry. Oh,
Mrs. Allen.
What? Dear, help me take this pin out of my sleeve. I'm afraid it's torn a hole already.
Yes, Mrs. Allen. No, it hasn't been torn.
Oh, I should have been sorry if it had. The pin is very pretty, and this is a favourite gown. No, it costs but 9 shillings a yard.
Exactly what I should have guessed it.
Would you indeed? You must know your muslins.
Pretty well. I always buy my own cravats. My sister often trusts me in the choice of a gown. The other day I bought one for her, and I was told it was a bargain.
I could never get Mr. Allen to know one of my gowns from another. You must be a great comfort to your sister.
I believe I am.
What do you think of Miss Morland's gown?
Very, very pretty. But it will not wash well. I'm afraid it will fray.
It will not.
You may laugh, but frayed muslin is no laughing matter.
I am quite of your opinion, sir. And so I told Miss Morland when she bought it.
Of course, muslin can always be turned to some other account. Miss Morland will get enough out of it for a handkerchief or cap or cloak. I believe we may go through to the dancing.
I can see I shall make a poor figure in your journal tomorrow.
You will not.
I'm pleased to hear it.
I don't keep a journal.
Well, then start now. How are your absent cousins to understand your life in Bath? I know exactly what you will say. Friday, went to the upper rooms, wore my sprigged muslin robe with blue trimmings and, let's see, plain black shoes. Appeared to much advance, strangely harassed by a queer half-witted man who distressed me with his nonsense.
I shan't say any such thing.
Shall I tell you what I would wish you to say?
If you please.
Danced with a very agreeable young man. Had a great deal of conversation with him. Seems a most extraordinary genius. Hope I may know more of him.
I shall not say that either.
And why not?
Well, we have not danced.
That is very forgetful of me. Come along. I mean to do better than George Parry.
In Bath, every morning brings its regular duties. There are shops to be visited, some new part of the town to be looked at, and the pump room to be attended. With more than usual eagerness did Catherine go thither the following day, secure within herself of seeing Mr. Tilney, and ready to greet him with a smile. But no smile was needed.
Oh, Catherine, look!
What is it, Mrs. Allen?
I'm sure that's one of the Skinner girls.
Where?
Now I think of it, she doesn't really look like her. How pleasant it would be if we knew someone here.
Yes, Mrs. Allen.
Oh, do look, Catherine, over there.
Where?
There goes an odd-looking woman. What a fright of a gown she's got on. No, over there, do look or you'll miss it. How old-fashioned it is.
Mrs. Allen.
What?
Dear Mrs. Allen, she may hear us.
Oh, I hardly think so, my dear. Not among all these people. Such a queer cut, don't you think?
See, she is coming over.
Is she? Not mention it, so she is. I cannot think that any harm has been done.
May we not leave?
Oh, just as you wish, my dear.
Excuse me.
Watch me.
I do not wish to detain, but it is Mrs. Allen.
Aye, so it is. We are just leaving, are we not, Catherine?
It is you. I knew I could not be mistaken. It is a long time since I had the pleasure of seeing you.
Is it? Wait. I know you. Is it not Mrs... Mrs...
Thorpe! I thought you must have recognised me, for I saw you point me out.
So I did. It's the luckiest chance you being here, Catherine. This is Mrs. Thorpe. She was my most particular friend. When we were younger, we were inseparable.
We were never apart.
How is Mr. Thorpe?
I have been a widow for some years now.
Oh, dear, I had not heard.
And you, Mrs. Allen? I did not think you had a daughter.
Daughter? Why, no. This is Catherine Morland, the daughter of the clergyman in our parish, a very good sort of people. You have a family, I remember. A girl, was it not? Or was it boys?
The joy on this meeting was very great, as well it might be, since they had been content to know nothing of each other for the last 15 years.
My children are a great comfort. 3 girls and our boy. John, he is at Oxford. Morland. Morland, that name is very familiar to me.
I have often heard my brother James speak of a John Thorpe, a friend of his from college.
Indeed! James Morland! He spent the last week of the Christmas vacation with us. Here comes one of my dear girls now. Isabella, over here.
Mama.
What do you think has happened, Isabella?
I'm too weary to think. There is hardly a genteel face to be seen.
Here is my old friend, Mrs. Allen.
Oh,
and this is Catherine Morland. You remember James Morland?
I would have known you to be his sister anywhere. You are excessively like him. See, Mama, the complexion is exact.
Oh, so it is.
May I take her from you a while? Oh, come with me, dear Miss Morland.
How fortunate that we should meet like this.
Oh, it is indeed. I remember when we last met, you had a morning dress, tawny colours, I think it was. Oh.
I know we are to be great friends. As soon as I saw you, I felt an immediate sympathy between us.
It is kind of you to say so, Miss Thorpe.
Isabella, please. And I shall call you Catherine. The sister of James Morland will always be honoured by the Thorpe family.
I believe they are much together at Oxford.
They are inseparable. The friendship of two young men is a noble thing, is it not?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Mrs. Allen, is she one of the Allens of Fullerton? I have heard your brother speak of them.
Mr. Allen owns a great deal of the land in our parish.
And the Allens have an interest in your family?
I think they must. They are very kind, always.
Your brother speaks of them as being delightful. I can see that by Mrs. Allen. Her manner is so unforced and easy. See how my mother dotes on her. I see your brother in you, the same sympathetic spirit. See those two young men over there?
Where?
There. Oh, don't look now, for it will encourage their conceit. One of them is Captain Hunt. He has accounted a tremendous flirt. Odious creatures. Now, have you made a conquest yet? Don't deny it, for I shall not believe you.
I have only danced with one man since I've been here.
Aha, I have found you out. What is his name?
Mr. Tilney. His Christian name is Henry.
My dearest Catherine, your eyes give you away. You are like me. Once you give your affection, it is unshakable. Are Captain Hunt and his friend looking at us?
I don't think they are. He's just now talking to someone else.
Well, oh, yes.
Do you know his new companion?
It is Frank Lockwood, I believe. He is of no consequence.
Well, he looks very pleasant.
We will soon learn that appearances can deceive. The company here today is very shallow.
I am sorry that you do not care for Bath.
Not care for Bath? What can have given you that impression? We have not been here more than 3 days.
I heard you tell your mother you were weary of it.
Did I? No one says a great many things. To be sure, assemblies at Bath are very much inferior to those of London. Then again, they are infinitely superior to those of Tunbridge Wells. But it is true that I do not care much for society. I find most pleasure with my books.
I could never care for reading.
But what of Udolpho? You must have read that, at least.
Well, what is it?
The Mysteries of Udolpho by Mrs. Radcliffe. I felt sure you must have read it, for you are just like the heroine, Emily St. Aubyn. She is quite the sweetest girl.
Well, what kind of book is it?
The horridest thing imaginable. Poor Emily endures the most agonising tribulations. Everyone I know dotes on it. We all talk of nothing else.
I think I should like it.
I will lend you my copy. It is the least I can do for the sister of Mr. Morland.
The two new friends walked together to Miss Thorpe's lodgings, where Catherine was given a copy of The Mysteries of Udolpho, and thence to Pulteney Street. On parting, Catherine ran directly upstairs and watched Miss Thorpe's progress down the street from the drawing-room window. She admired the graceful spirit of her walk, the fashionable air of her figure and dress, and felt grateful, as well she might, for the chance which had procured her such a friend.
Oh, there you are, my dear. Did you enjoy your time with Miss Thorpe?
Yes, I did, very much.
My oldest friend here in Bath with us. I couldn't be more delighted. And you are pleased with her daughter?
Very much. She knows so much and has done so much. I enjoyed our conversation.
What is it you have there?
The Mysteries of Udolpho. Isabella lent it to me.
Oh, that was good of her. I am glad you have met someone of your own age. Mind you, she has fallen off sadly in the matter of dress.
Isabella, I think she dresses very well.
No, Mrs. Thorpe. When I knew her, Caroline Thorpe was one of the best turned out women you could meet. But now she dresses so queerly. Still, I suppose being a widow and having children means she has no leisure to give to clothes.
I admire the way Isabella dresses.
Yes, it is well enough. What a pity Mr. Tilney was not at the pump room. Did I tell you Mr. Allen made inquiries about him? It seems he is a clergyman. He lives in Gloucester. I cannot recall if he has any brothers or sisters.
He mentioned a sister.
Aye, so he did. And his mother or his father is dead. I cannot remember which. At any rate, it is quite a respectable family. Now, what is their home called? Northanger Abbey, that's it. It is quite large, I believe.
Northanger Abbey? Do you suppose it is really an abbey?
I couldn't say. What sort of book is it?
Oh, the horriblest thing imaginable, Isabella says. She quite dotes on it.
Oh, look, Mr. Allen. There is Mrs. Thorpe and her daughter. Oh, good, good, they've seen us.
I should be glad to meet her at last. You've talked about nothing else for the past 24 hours.
Oh, Mrs. Allen.
Mrs. Thorpe. You remember my husband?
From your wedding, yes.
How do you do, ma'am?
This is my daughter, Isabella.
How do you do, sir? My brother's friend James Morland has spoken so much of you that I feel we are already acquainted. Mrs. Allen, that is a delightful cloak you're wearing.
I'm very pleased that you noticed, my dear.
I assure you I have not seen one I like half so well.
Thank you.
We are going to walk along the crescent. Will you join us?
With pleasure.
You must come with me, Catherine. There's so much I want to say to you. Give me your arm.
What a charming picture Isabella and Catherine make.
Aye, charming.
I am vastly pleased to see you. I believe your Mr. Tilney was in the church.
No, Mr. Tilney was not there. Why did you think he might be?
So many men were admiring you. I am sure some of them were quite in love with you.
I did not see anyone looking at me.
That is because where the heart is really attached, one does not care for the attention of anybody else. If only you knew how perfectly I understand your feelings. But I must say no more.
What do you mean?
Do not distress me by pressing the point. I have said too much already. Tell me, have you started Udolpho?
Oh, I have not been able to put it down. If we had not gone to church, I would still be reading it.
Delightful. Have you got to Valancourt yet?
I have. Well, he has just introduced himself to Emily and her father.
He is charming, is he not? Only all men could be like Valancourt.
The progress of the friendship between Catherine and Isabella Thorpe was as quick as its beginning had been warm. They were always arm in arm when they walked, and were not to be divided in the set. If a rainy morning deprived them of other enjoyments, they shut themselves up indoors to read novels. I will not adopt that ungenerous and impolitic custom so common with novel writers of scarcely ever permitting them to be read by their own heroine, who, if she accidentally take up a novel, is sure to turn over its insipid pages with disgust.
Oh, what is it? You've gone quite pale. I am got to the Black Veil.
How delightful. Let me see.
Oh, no, not yet. It's too dreadful.
Emily passed on with faltering steps, and having paused a moment at the door before she attempted to open it, she then hastily entered the chamber and went towards the picture, which appeared to be enclosed in a frame of uncommon size that hung in a dark part of the room. She paused again, and then, with a timid hand, lifted the veil.
Oh, Isabella!
But instantly let it fall, perceiving that what it had concealed was no picture. And before she could leave the chamber, she dropped, senseless, to the floor.
Give it back! I must know what is behind the picture.
It is worse than you can imagine.
Oh, tell me. Oh, no, don't. I would not be told upon any account. Oh, I am sure it is the Lady Laurentini's skeleton. Oh, I am delighted with the book.
And when you have finished Udolpho, we will read the Italian together. Oh. Here are more of the same kind for you.
Oh, let me see.
The Castle of Wolfenbach.
Yes.
Mysterious Warnings. Necromancer of the Black Forest.
Oh, I like the sound of that one. Are you sure they are all horrid?
Quite sure.
When I have finished Udolpho, I shall want to read it over again. I shall not look at another book till then.
When she was not reading Udolpho, Catherine was disappointed in the hope of meeting Mr. Tilney again. Every search for him was equally unsuccessful, whether in morning lounges or evening assemblies, at the upper or lower rooms, at dressed or undressed balls. His name was not in the pump room book, and curiosity could do no more.
My dearest creature, what can have made you so late? I've been frantic to see you.
I came as quickly as I could.
Forgive me, dear Catherine. I'm feeling persecuted. Do you see those two young men?
Where?
Over by the window. They have been staring at me for half an hour at least.
Oh, it cannot have been so long. It's only just 1 o'clock.
It is 10 minutes at least. They've put me quite out of countenance.
They are looking away now. Let us move.
That will encourage them. They are the most conceited creatures and think themselves of so much importance.
What should we do?
Ignore them. They believe that we are incapable of real friendship and cannot be happy in each other's company without wishing for theirs. Let us prove them wrong. We shall be very serious.
Very well.
What are they doing now?
They are looking out of the window. They have seen something that amuses them.
They give themselves such airs. The tall one is the older of the Bingham brothers. Tell me, what news of elusive Mr. Tilney?
Well, all I know is that he cannot be in Bath.
Oh, my sweetest Catherine, it is too cruel.
You should not persuade me that I think so very much about Mr. Tilney, for perhaps I may never see him again.
I'm sure you would be miserable if you thought so. I know I am on your behalf.
While I have Udolpho to read, I feel as if nobody could make me miserable. Oh, that odious Montoni! How could he persecute Emily so?
It is the nature of some men to do so. Oh, they're trying to get our attention. Let us go and look at the arrivals. We shall be safe there. They're not coming this way, are they?
No.
I hope they're not so impertinent as to follow us. Charles Bingham is a notorious flirt.
It's all right. They're just leaving.
And which way have they gone?
They have turned left. I suppose they're going towards the churchyard.
Well, I am amazingly glad to be rid of them. Shall we go to Milsom Street? There is a hat there I'm dying to show you.
But if we only wait a few minutes, there will be no danger of our meeting them.
I assure you, I have no notion of treating men with any such respect. That is the way to spoil them.
Catherine had nothing to oppose against such reasoning, and therefore, to show the independence of Miss Thorpe and her resolution of humbling the sex, they set off immediately, as fast as they could walk, in pursuit of the young men.
Clear the way!
Oh!
Oh,
these odious gigs, how I detest them!
Catherine!
James! Is that you?
Mr. Morland and my brother! Oh, support me, Catherine, I feel faint.
Kitty! Miss Thorpe!
Oh, what are you doing here?
Miss Thorpe, what is the matter?
Take my arm, Catherine. It is the most delightful surprise to see you, Mr. Morland.
How glad I am to see you again. And you, of course, Kitty. Thorpe and I are down from Oxford to stay for a week or so. We have taken rooms in your buildings, Miss Thorpe. Thorpe, this is my sister. Catherine, this is John Thorpe. As good a fellow as ever lived.
How do you do?
Oh, Mr. Morland, you have quite taken our breath away.
I had a notion for a change of scene, didn't we, Morland? Right, Miss Morland, how long do you think we've been running from Tetbury?
I do not know the distance.
25 miles if it's an inch. Drove out of the inn yard at Tetbury just as the town clock struck 11. I defy any man in England to make my horse go less than 10 miles an hour. Ah, look at him. Did you ever see an animal so made for speed in your life?
He looks very hot, to be sure.
You're fond of an open carriage, are you, Miss Morland?
I have hardly ever had the opportunity of being in one, but I believe I should like it.
Right, we'll drive you out in mine every day.
Oh, please don't trouble yourself.
I'll drive you to Lansdowne Hill tomorrow. What do you say?
Will your horse not want rest?
You know little of horses, I see. Nothing ruins a horse so much as rest. No, I shall exercise mine at an average of 4 hours every day while I'm here.
Oh, but that will be 40 miles a day.
40? 50, for what I care. Well, I will drive you to Lansdowne Hill tomorrow.
Oh, how delightful that will be. My dearest Catherine, I quite envy you. But I'm afraid, brother, you will not have room for a third.
A third, indeed. I did not come to Bath to drive my sister about. That would be a good joke, if fate. Morland must take care of you.
I shall be delighted. Now I must pay my respects to Mr. and Mrs. Allen.
I suppose I'd better show my face or mother. I'll never hear the end of it. Well, you better come with me, Bella.
If we must, brother. Adieu, Mr. Morland.
Yeah.
So, how do you like my friend Thorpe?
He seems agreeable.
A little of a rattle, but there is nothing wrong in that.
And Miss Thorpe, are you much in her company?
Oh, indeed I am. I love her exceedingly.
I'm very glad. She's just the kind of young woman I would wish to be your friend. She has so much good sense and she's so unaffected and amiable.
Oh, I am pleased that you like her. You never mentioned her when you wrote to me after your visit there.
Didn't I? Her family are all so fond of her. She must be admired in such a place as this, I suppose.
Oh, yes, very much. Mr. Allen thinks her the prettiest girl in Bath.
I dare say he does. And I do not know any man who is a better judge of beauty than Mr. Allen.
My dear, I worry that all this reading is not good for you. Must be bad for the complexion. Mm. I never could fancy reading myself. Oh, who can that be?
Well, Miss Morland, here I am. Good as my word. How do you do, Mrs. Allen?
How do you do, Mr.
Thorpe, ma'am. Morland's friend from Oxford. Oh, come, Miss Morland, what's that you've got there?
It is my book.
Reading? No time for that. Bella and Morland are in a confounded hurry to be off. They want to get their tumble over.
What do you mean? Where are you all going to?
Going to? Why, you've not forgotten our engagement. We're going up to Lansdowne Hill.
Something was said about it, I remember, but really I did not expect you.
Not expect me? That's a good one. What a dust you would have made if I'd not come.
Mrs. Allen, what do you think? Can you spare me for an hour or two? Shall I go?
Oh, do just as you please, my dear.
Come along, Miss Morland. Throw your book away. You won't need it.
Goodbye, Mrs. Allen.
Look at the gig, Morland's hired. Did you ever see such a tit-happy little thing in your life?
We shall be quite happy, thank you, brother.
Lead the way, Thorpe.
Now, look at my gig. Neat, is it not? Town built. I've not had it a month.
It's very nice.
Curricle hung, you see. Seat, trunk, showcase, splashing board, lamps, silver moulding, all complete. The ironwork is as good as new, or better. We try to keep up, Morland. Now, Miss Morland, do not be frightened if my horse should dance about a little at first. Whoa! Oh, will you stand out of the way?
Young fool!
He's full of spirit, playful as can be, but there's no vice in him. Yes, Christchurch man. Very good sort of fellow. Steady, Bruce. Well, he ran it for a few weeks, and it was convenient to have done with it. I happened just then to be looking out for some light thing of the kind. Well, I chanced to meet him on Magdalen Bridge. Ah, Thorpe, said he. Do you happen to want such a little thing as this? Oh, it's a capital one of the kind. Steady! Well, what do you ask, says I? And how much do you think he did, Miss Morland?
I am sure I cannot guess at all.
50 guineas. I threw down the money and the carriage was mine.
Well, I know so little of such things that I cannot judge whether it was cheap or dear.
I wasn't the loser. Poor Freeman wanted cash, you see. Might have sold it for 10 guineas more the next day. Jackson of Oriel bid me 60 at once.
Why are we stopping?
This is what we came for. Lands downhill.
Oh, it's very picturesque, is it not?
Yeah.
Have you ever read The Mysteries of Udolpho, Mr. Thorpe?
Udolpho? What thing is that?
It's a novel.
Oh, Lord, I never read novels. I've better things to do.
You would like Udolpho if you were to read it. It is so very interesting.
Not I, Faith.
No, if I read any, it shall be Mrs. Radcliffe's. Her novels are amusing enough. Some fun and nature in them.
Udolpho was written by Mrs. Radcliffe.
Was it? Well, I was thinking of some other book then. My novels are all so full of nonsense and stuff. It's all very well for young women. Look here. Old Alan is, he's rolling in money, is he not?
What did you say?
The old Alan, the, man you are with. Big estate, plenty of capital.
If you mean Mr. Alan, yes, I believe he is very rich.
Yeah. No children to speak of?
No, not any.
The famous thing for his heirs. He's your godfather, is he not?
My godfather? No! What can have given you that impression?
Well, you're always very much with them.
Yes, very much.
Well, I saw him in the card room last evening. He seemed a decent old fellow. He lived well in his time, I dare say. He's not gouty for nothing. Drink a bottle a day, does he?
Why should you think such a thing? He is a very temperate man. You will never see him in liquor.
But if he wants to drink, then let him, say I. What are you looking for?
Oh, I cannot make out James and Isabella. They should not be so far behind us.
No, I dare say they've had a tumble.
You do not really think so, Mr. Thorpe?
Well, in that gig, there's not a sound piece of iron about it. The wheels are worn out, and as for the body, fall to pieces after 10 miles. Oh, I'd not go 2 miles in it for £50,000.
Oh, we must warn them.
Ah, they'll only get a roll if it does break down. And there's plenty of dirt. The excellent falling.
Oh.
Get on with you.
You must turn back. If you think my brother and Isabella are in danger, it is your duty to find them and warn them.
Oh, curse it. The carriage is safe enough. The man knows how to drive it. I would undertake for £5 to drive it to York and back again without losing a nail. Now, get on with you.
Here we are, Mrs. Allen. I brought Miss Smallland home in one piece, you see.
I hope you have had a pleasant airing.
Oh, we've had a famous time of it, did we not, Miss Smallland? We are both of a mind to try it again sometime.
I am worried about James and Isabella.
What for, my dear? They have returned home at least 2 hours ago.
Oh, they did not have an accident then.
They did not mention one. Oh. I believe they had a very pleasant drive.
There. What did I say? Miss Morland was full of unaccountable fears, Mrs. Allen. She would have had them lying dead in a ditch or some such. Well, if you will, excuse me, ma'am.
Send my kind thoughts to your mother.
Miss Morland.
Yes.
We must rattle about again soon.
Oh. Right. Well, my dear.
Mrs. Allen.
He seems very taken with you. Was it a very pleasant day?
We were jolted around a good deal.
What would you like to do, my dear?
I should like to sit with my book for a while.
Mrs. Thorpe speaks all the time of John's spirit.
Mm.
He certainly is lively. You are yawning, my dear.
I am a little weary.
I shall have to write your mother that you are tiring yourself out. Oh, you'll never guess who I met today.
Who?
Go on, guess.
I really don't know.
We had a great deal of talk together. She was wearing a very pretty spotted muslin.
Dear Mrs. Allen, who was it?
Miss Tilney, Mr. Tilney's sister. And by what I can learn, she always dresses very handsomely.
Mr. Tilney's sister? Well, where?
I went to the pump room with Mrs. Thorpe as soon as you were gone. And after, we agreed to take a turn in the Crescent. And there we met Mrs. Hughes, and Miss Tilney was walking with her.
Oh, did she speak to you?
Oh, yes. We walked along the Crescent together for half an hour. She said that her brother had told her about meeting you that night in the upper rooms. She would be very glad to meet you. She's a most agreeable young person. After she had gone, Mrs. Hughes talked to me a great deal about the family.
Oh, what did she tell you of them?
A vast deal indeed. She hardly talked of anything else.
But did she tell you what part of Gloucestershire they came from?
She did, but I cannot recollect now. Oh. But they are a very good kind of people, and rich. She said that Northanger Abbey is accounted a very fine place.
Has Mr. Tilney returned to Bath?
Well, do you know, I forgot to ask.
Your brother and I were never in any danger.
I would not have had you by for the world. Our opinions were so exactly the same, it was quite ridiculous. You are such a sly thing, you would have made some droll remark or other about it.
I promise I would not have.
As for my brother, he is quite in love with you after yesterday.
What secrets are you two sharing?
Oh, James. There now, I knew how it would be. You men have such restless curiosity. Talk of the curiosity of women, indeed. Be satisfied. You are not to know anything at all of the matter.
Is that likely to satisfy me, do you think?
Perhaps we are talking about you, so I would advise you not to listen.
Cruel Isabella! And I came over in the hope that you would be my guide in the pump room. I am sure you know all there is to know.
Oh, excuse me, but I see someone I think I know.
Adieu, Catherine. This brother of yours will allow me no peace.
And your pretty face will allow me none.
Your eyes are too easily pleased, Mr. Morland.
I would not have you think so.
Forgive me for asking, but are you Miss Tilney?
Yes, I am.
I thought so. There is a family resemblance to your brother.
Oh, you must be Miss Morland.
Yes. How glad I am to meet you.
And I you. Henry spoke with pleasure of his conversation with you.
Oh, did he? I remember he was most kind. I have not seen him since that evening.
When Henry had the pleasure of seeing you before, he was in Bath only for a day or so. He came to engage lodgings for us. Then he was held up on parish business. He returned the day before yesterday.
I felt sure he had quite gone away. He never comes to the pump room, I suppose.
Yes, sometimes. But this morning he rid out with my father.
Your father?
You seem surprised.
Oh, that is... I understood your parents were dead.
No, my father is not dead. It is my mother who died.
Oh, I am sorry.
It is some years ago now. I'm very pleased to have met you. I hope we will have the pleasure of meeting again soon.
Shall you be at the Cotillion on Thursday?
Perhaps. Yes, I think we certainly shall.
Well, I am going as well.
Then we shall certainly meet there.
Catherine, over here.
Dearest, you look radiant. John has just walked off, but he will be back shortly.
He will want to dance with you. Help me pin up my tray. Oh,
you must tell him that he need not trouble himself. There, it is done.
Not trouble himself, you arch creature. He is dying of impatience. I must leave you, dearest. Your brother insists on the first dance.
Well, my dear Catherine, you should be with the young people. Is that not so, Mrs. Thorpe?
I am sure John will want to dance with you. He is a great favourite at dances. Why, there he is. I shall fetch him over.
No, please, I do not care.
But you must dance, my dear. You know you like dancing.
Every young lady may feel for my heroine, for every young lady has at some time or other known a similar agitation, to be in danger from the pursuit of someone whom they wish to avoid, and anxious for the attention of someone whom they wish to please.
Good evening, Mrs. Allen.
Oh, good evening, my dear.
Good evening again, Miss Morland.
Miss Tilney, I am very pleased to see you.
Is something troubling you?
Oh, dear, does it show?
A little.
There is a friend of my brother's who I wish to avoid.
You see that red-faced young man?
It is. And his mother and sister say he wants to dance with me.
And you don't want to dance with him?
Well, I really would rather not.
Here comes Henry. Oh. He may provide a solution to your problem.
Good evening, Mrs. Allen.
Good evening.
Miss Morland, I am glad to see you again. I see you have met my sister. May I lay claim to this dance?
Yes, you may. Thank you.
I am very happy to see you again, sir, indeed. And I'm glad you've managed to change her mind.
Have I?
Why, only just now she announced that she would not dance. We were afraid you had left Bath.
Some business in my parish detained me.
I dare say you are not sorry to be back again. It is just the place for young people. I tell Mr. Allen when he talks of being sick of it.
Miss Morland.
Mr. Thorpe.
Oh, I suppose we are to jig about.
I am sorry I am already engaged to dance.
Oh, heyday, Miss Morland. What's the meaning of this? Well, I thought it was fixed that you and I were to dance together.
I wonder you should think so, for you never asked me.
Oh, well, that's a good one, by Jove. Well, I was about to ask you as soon as I came into the room, but when I turned round, you were gone. It's a cursed shabby trick. I only
came for the sake of dancing with you.
Oh, I'm sure you did not.
And Miss Morland?
What chap have you there?
Mr. Tilney.
That's a cursed shabby trick, I say.
He would have put me out of patience had he stayed with you half a minute longer.
He is the brother of my particular friend.
He had no business to take the attention of my partner from me. I consider a country dance as an emblem of marriage.
I am sure they are very different things.
Consider. Fidelity and compliance are the principal duties of both. Men who do not choose to dance or marry themselves have no business with the partners or wives of their neighbours.
It isn't the same. People that marry can never part. People that dance only stand opposite each other in a room for half an hour.
In each case, the man has the advantage of choice, woman the power of refusal. The man and woman belong exclusively to each other till the moment of dissolution. Their duty is to give the other no cause for wishing to be otherwise engaged.
Well, I never thought of that.
Then your notions of the duties of dancing are not so strict as I might wish. If any gentleman were to address you, there would be nothing to restrain you from talking to him for as long as you choose.
But Mr. Thorpe is a friend of my brother's, that if he talks to me, I must talk to him again. Apart from him, I don't know anyone else.
That is no great security.
If I do not know anybody, I cannot talk to them. Besides, I do not want to talk to anybody else.
Now you have given me a security worth having, and I shall proceed with courage.
Oh, look. There are two chairs.
Where?
Next to the lady in green. Quick, or we'll lose them.
I see you have improved your skill in finding chairs since our first meeting.
Thank you.
I am failing in my duties as a partner.
How is that?
I have not asked if you are enjoying your time in Bath.
Is that necessary?
It is the expected thing.
In that case, I am enjoying Bath enormously.
Take care, or you will forget to be tired of it at the proper time.
What is the proper time?
6 weeks is considered normal.
Well, I do not think I should be tired if I were to stay here 6 months.
It is the fashion to find it inferior to London after the proper time.
Well, other people must judge for themselves. I live in a small village in the country. In Bath, there are things to do and things to see I never thought of in Fullerton.
You have grown tired of the country?
Oh, not at all. I have always lived there and always been very happy. But one day in the country is exactly like another. I help Mama or call on Mrs. Allen.
Ah, Mrs. Allen.
Why do you smile?
Oh, no reason.
I think you laugh too much at people.
There is a difference between smiling and laughter.
Well, Mrs. Allen has been very good to me. If you laugh at her, you may come to laugh at me.
I promise you that I will never laugh at you. I may often smile, though.
When I am at home again, I shall always be talking of Bath. Who can ever be tired of Bath?
No one who brings such fresh feelings to it as you do. How do you spend your time here?
I read a great deal.
And what are you reading?
Oh, I don't want you to laugh.
Remember my promise.
The Mysteries of Udolpho, Mrs. Radcliffe.
Ah.
I expect you will think it is all nonsense.
I will not.
Well, Catherine, has my brother been agreeable?
Yes, thank you.
I am always agreeable.
You are sometimes agreeable.
I shall prove it to you. Miss Morland is reading Udolpho, and consequently likes nature at its wildest. I suggest, if the weather holds, we three take a walk to Beechen Cliff.
Oh.
I promise it will not disappoint you.
Oh, I should like it beyond anything in the world.
The weather may not be suitable. We've had so much rain recently.
Oh, do not let us put it off. Let us go tomorrow.
If the weather is good, I dare say we may venture forth.
The weather will be good. I know it will.
Henry, have you seen our father?
He's still in the card room, I imagine.
Oh, in that case.
I did not know your father was here tonight.
On these occasions, he prefers the card room to the ballroom. Now, Miss Morland, you are engaged, and we shall call for you at 12.
The rest of the evening passed in a whirl of happiness, until Catherine cheerfully submitted to the wish of Mr. Allen, which took them away rather early, and her spirits danced within her as she danced in her chair all the way home.
Oh, dear. It has not stopped raining.
You will not make it stop by looking out of the window.
I shan't give up yet. It is only 12. It may clear at any moment.
I have no doubt in the world of it being a very fine day if the clouds would only go off and the sun keep out.
It's only a little rain. Perhaps it may come to nothing.
Perhaps it may.
Well, there are four umbrellas already. I hate the sight of an umbrella.
Yes, they are disagreeable things to carry. I would much rather take a chair. Oh, there will be very few people in the pump room if it keeps raining.
There. It has stopped again.
But the streets will be so very wet.
There they are. I knew they would come.
I hope Mr. Allen will put on his great coat when he goes out, but I dare say he will not. Oh, what a commotion.
Make haste. Make haste. Put on your hat this moment. There's no time to be lost. We're going to Bristol. How do you do, Mrs. Allen?
Is not Bristol a long way off?
I cannot go with you today. I am already engaged. I expect some friends at every moment.
What? Good day, Mrs. Allen.
Oh, good day.
My sweetest Catherine, is not this delightful? We shall have a most heavenly drive. You are to thank your brother and me for the scheme.
Yes, we shall drive directly to Clifton and dine there. As soon as dinner's over, we shall go on to King's Weston.
I doubt we're able to do so much.
Yeah, we shall be able to do 10 times more. King's Weston, aye. And Blaise Castle, too. And anything else we think of.
Blaise Castle? What is that?
Your finest place in England. Worth going 50 miles to see.
What? Is it really a castle, an old castle?
Oldest in the kingdom, I imagine.
But is it like what one reads of?
Exactly the same, dearest. It could be the model for the castle in Udolpho.
Oh, then I should like to see it. But I cannot go.
Not go? My beloved creature, what can you mean?
Miss Tilney and her brother are to call on me to take a country walk. They promised to come at 12, only it rained. And now, as it is so fine, I dare say they will be here soon.
I vow they will not.
Well, why is that?
I saw them. Yes, we turned into Broad Street. Do you drive a phaeton with bright chestnuts, does it not?
I do not know.
Yeah, I know it does. I saw him. You were talking of the man you danced with last night, are not you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I saw him at that moment turn up the Lansdowne Road in a phaeton, driving a smart-looking gal.
Are you sure?
No, I knew him again directly.
It is very odd. But I suppose they thought it would be too dirty for a walk.
Yeah, well, he might. I never saw so much dirt in my life. Walk? Well, you could no more walk than you could fly.
My dearest Catherine, you cannot refuse going now.
I should like to see the castle. But what if they are only gone out for an hour till it is dry? They may call by and by.
Hmm? Well, there's no danger of that, for I heard Tilney hallooing to a man who was just passing by on horseback. Well, they said they were going as far as Wick Rocks.
And then I will. Shall I go, Mrs. Allen?
I think you must go, Catherine.
Oh, Mrs. Allen, you must persuade her.
Just as you please, my dear.
Get on with it. And try not to get lost this time, Morgan. Famous ball last night, was it not?
Yes.
I still say it was a cursed, shabby trick. I come only to dance with you.
Mr. Thorpe, could you drive a little slower? It is most uncomfortable to travel at this rate.
What? Oh, if we must. We have a long way to go. And this gig was built for speed, you know. Who's that staring at me?
Who? Where?
Your girl on the right-hand pavement. Oh, she's almost out of sight now.
Oh, stop. Stop, Mr. Thorpe. It is Miss Tilney. Oh, it is indeed.
What? Well, what the devil are you talking about?
You told me they were gone. Stop at once. I will get out this moment and go to them.
Get on there.
No.
Sorry, I can't hear you this morning. We must put on a turn of speed if we get to Blaise Castle before nightfall.
No, please stop, Mr. Thorpe. I cannot go on. No, I will not go on. I must go back to Miss Tilney.
Yeah. I could have sworn it was Tilney in that phaeton. In fact, I know it was him.
I saw them with my own eyes.
Are you sure? It could have been another couple altogether.
How could you deceive me so, Mr. Thorpe? How could you say you saw them? I would not have had it happen for the world. They must think it so strange, so rude of me to go by them without saying a word. You do not know how vexed I am.
Well, it was you who wanted to see Blaise Castle, was it not?
I shall have no pleasure in that, nor Clifton, nor in anything else. How could you say you saw them driving out in a phaeton?
Well, I'm a fool to try and please you. Why is all this fuss about Tilney? Half the man General Tilney is.
Oh, how would you know?
Well, I met him in the card room last night. He's a fine old fellow. Rich, too, upon my soul. He was glad to make my acquaintance. We talked of billiards. And of you.
You talked about me?
Told him you were the finest gal in Bath.
He seemed inclined to take notice of what I said.
You had no right to talk of me.
No right after all the fine things I said to him.
Thorpe!
Now, what does that brother of yours want?
We had better go back.
What's that he say?
It is too late to go on today.
Well, have you not got such a damn beast to drive? We might have done it very well.
We have been an hour from Pulteney Street, and we're not halfway there. We set out too late.
He is right. We'd better put it off until another day.
Well, my horse would have trotted to Clifton within the hour.
Dear Catherine, I am sorry you are disappointed in Blaise Castle.
I don't care about Blaise Castle.
Don't look so cross. You would quite break my heart.
I am more vexed than I can say.
She's been scolding me because we saw the Tilneys.
You should not have misled.
No, not that again.
The Tilneys were entirely to blame. They should have been more punctual. It was dirty indeed, but what did that signify? We did not mind.
No, it signified everything. I have been rude to people who have been kind to me and must appear ungrateful and sly because I did not hold firm. I cannot bear to think of it.
I think we must turn back.
Go on or stay. It's all one to me.
Please, take me home now.
So the party returned to Bath, much less in spirits than when they started out. And now I may dismiss my heroine to the sleepless couch, which is the true heroine's portion, to a pillow strewed with thorns and wet with tears.
In episode 1 of Northanger Abbey, Jane Austen was played by Amanda Root and Catherine by Emily Wachter. Henry was played by David Harewood, Mrs. Allen by Julia McKenzie, and Isabella by Claire Skinner. Eleanor was played by Saskia Reeves, Mrs. Thorpe by Jenny Agata, and John Thorpe by Jonathan Keeble. James was played by Shiv Greywall, and Mr. Allen by John Rowe. Mr. Morland was played by Gerard McDermott, and Mrs. Morland by Susan Jameson. Northanger Abbey was written by Jane Austen and dramatised by Dominic Power. The Spinet was played by Mimi Waitsman. The composer was Peter Weigold. And the director was Pam Fraser-Solomon.